Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. As long as there's a coaching search going on, it is a football Friday here on Sports Radio 610. Nice to be with all of you. I am Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. Seth, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Sean. I almost wanted to say I'm hanging in there. I don't know. I need some perspective on this stuff because I feel like the drama with the Texans has maybe taken a larger presence in my life than I should. I find myself treating people maybe in a less than stellar fashion the other 20 hours a day when I'm not on here, and I realize, oh, wait a second, I'm taking all of this Jack Easterby stuff out on the poor citizens of the world, and I apologize to any owner of a Cambodian donut shop, hypothetically, that maybe I was a little bit curt with yesterday, in theory, and I traced the roots of it back to, yes, the customer service was bad, but no, I shouldn't have been as publicly angry as I was with the service.
Right.
But look, somewhere in Houston, I'll find another Cambodian donut shop. Somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll keep seeking and
it's
looking.
A big city.
I'll find one.
It's a big city. Well, the good news for
you. Oh, no, Sean, I never told you. I guess, I forgot. I never had that conversation with you about the whole Cambodian donut shop scene in Houston.
Is it
it's
good?
Fascinating.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah, they're really good. They're fritters. They make an incredible, like a lot of Cambodian donut shops make an incredible apple fritter.
Okay.
But there are also, As Cambodian and immigrants come over here, there are a few families that kind of help them stake their own donut shops.
Yeah.
Like they're just like whatever they do, whatever their process is, it yields incredible donuts. Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't make them angry by getting mad at them. The good news for you, Seth, is this whole coaching search thing, at least it overlaps with your actual job. There's Houstonians that are driving in today that are just as, if not more, psychologically and emotionally affected by what's going on with the Texans, and yet they have to go to a job that completely lies outside of the circle of sports. The Venn diagram of what they do and the Texans doesn't overlap at all. At least with us, this combines with your
jobs.
Yeah, that's all they're trying to do is be a Cambodian donut shop owner is all they're trying to do this morning. And in fact, let's start there because the news of the morning, and we can actually combine this. Yeah, here we go.
The search update.
This is sort of the search update. Seth, the chairs are starting to fill up here on the head coaching search. We had 7 openings to begin the offseason. We now have a mere 4 openings. In the last 24 hours, 3 of the 7 head coaching openings in the NFL have been filled. And I would say that to a degree, they all impact the Texans. I would say Robert Saleh taking the job in New York with the Jets impacts the Texans in that I think Texan fans and 2 hosts on this show really liked Robert Saleh as a Texans candidate. Texans clearly did not. They didn't even approach him about an interview for the job.
Also, Robert Saleh, I think, might be taking a couple of coordinators that perhaps Brandon Staley, who's a candidate the Texans have requested an interview from, were that he was potentially going to try to bring with him. I'm the Texans thoughts on Twitter linked that together, and
One of them is D'Amico Ryans. The expectation, as you've pointed out many times, as we've gushed over Robert Saleh as a potential Texans hire, is that he might bring D'Amico Ryans with him to be the DC. He is going to bring D'Amico Ryans with him, it would appear, but he will be the DC in New York. That's number one. Number two, this is just news hot off the presses this morning. Arthur Smith has been offered the job in Atlanta as the Falcons head coach. So he's been offered the job. I guess it remains to be seen if he's going to take it, but I would imagine he would. That's another candidate that it kind of strange. The news had been a week and a half ago that the Texans were one of the teams that was going to request an interview with Arthur Smith, and that never took place. So for whatever reason, Arthur Smith not on the Texans' radar. It would appear he's going to be off of everybody's radar if he accepts the offer from the Atlanta Falcons. And Seth, the big news that this is the one that most directly impacts the Texans because they play Jacksonville twice a year is that Urban Meyer is indeed going to take the job in Jacksonville. So Urban Meyer, one of the greatest college coaches of this or any generation, is now going to try his hand in the NFL, it would appear, with Trevor Lawrence as his quarterback.
Yeah, unless we hear otherwise. I mean, Urban Meyer is likely going to have a whole lot of control over the roster. That's really probably one of the least talked about talking points. And a lot of people have arguments for why Urban Meyer won't work in the NFL that I think are kind of garbage arguments. But Urban Meyer wanting total control, or I think people are anticipating that he's going to want close to total control.
Well, they haven't hired a GM yet.
Right,
that should be pointed
right.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, like we've seen what happens when guys like Bill O'Brien try to do it. Now, Bill O'Brien does not have nearly the resume of Urban Meyer. Almost nobody at the level of Urban Meyer has the track record of success almost immediately at every place he goes. You know, like it's really astounding how great he's been in college. But to take that leap to the NFL, in the modern NFL, where if you give a college coach with no NFL personnel experience or anything like that a bunch of control over the roster, how's that going to work out? Frankly, honestly, I don't worry about his personality and how it's going to mesh with the players. I think that he, above all else, kind of has an academic approach to motivation. He was a psychology major in college. It might seem like he's just an unbridled old school hard ass, and in some respects he is, but it's all calculated. And I think that he's going to take kind of a systematic approach to figuring out how he needs to change his methods and adapt them to work in the NFL. So there will be bumps in the road, but I think like compared to a guy like Tom Coughlin, who had NFL experience, you know, but was still running his program like a college coach in some respects, it took Tom Coughlin damn near 15 years for him to really figure out how to modify his approach. I think Urban Meyer will be a lot faster than that.
He was who I wanted for the Texans, if you remember, when we were doing all the voting on the website, you know, when all the hosts here were picking, you know, our ranking our top five of who we wanted as Texans head coach. I wanted Urban Meyer. That was my first choice. So by definition, if I wanted him for the Texans, by definition, I have to be nervous that he's taking the job with Jacksonville. So Seth, we're down to four openings, one of which is the Texans. It's Houston, it's Detroit, it is the Chargers, and it's the Eagles. Where do the Texans stack up among those four jobs, do you think, around the league? Chargers, Detroit. Texans, Lions, Eagles.
Chargers, Texans, Lions, Eagles. The Eagles were kind of hot on. I thought that Salah was going to go to the Eagles.
I think Eagles are the biggest mess out of all of those, if you want to know the truth. The Eagles.
Yeah, their cap situation is just such a mess, except the Lions are the Lions. I guess there's something. When it comes to the Lions, and this is something that candidates, GM and coaching candidates, this is what they call around asking about a lot of times, is what's it like working with the Ford family?
Yeah.
What is it that keeps guys like Matt Millen employed for as long as they do, which you could look at as a positive. The Lions have this way of kind of latching onto people and being committed to them longer than they should. Hasn't worked out that way for the two most recent coaches, obviously. I think that between the Eagles and the Lions, I think I still have to put – I trust that the Eagles know how they're going to get out of their cap situation.
Yeah.
The Lions just don't have those same issues. Do we know – the Lions kept their GM?
No, they fired him. It was Bob Quinn. I don't want to get too far down the road of the Eagles and the Lions. I think the main thing is the Texans. Where do the Texans stack up compared to these teams, do you think?
The Texans are on par with the Lions. They are below the Chargers and the Eagles.
I think that sounds right.
No. Quarterback, damn it.
Yeah.
Chargers, Texans, Eagles, Lions.
That's kind of how I would go. The Eagles and Lions are in their own little cesspool. And then the big concern now is the Chargers. And I think the big concern with the Chargers, Seth, I did a lot of reading on Brandon Staley yesterday because the Texans have requested an interview with him, the defensive coordinator with the Rams. I liked a lot of things I was reading about him. I liked a lot of the interviews that I watched of him. And he kind of fits the mold of this new wave coach that's a young guy, where they'd be getting in on sort of the Joe Brady, Sean McVay of the defensive side of the ball. He did a lot of things with mid-round draft picks on that defense. The Chargers would be a good job. He's going to interview for that Chargers job. He'd get to stay in L.A. and Kate, you know, take the job there as opposed to coming to Houston. I like Brandon Staley. So we got a lot of stuff to get to today is my point with all this. The Rockets played their first game last night in the post-James Harden era. They won. That was the good news. The Rockets put up a poll asking what James Harden's signature moment was here. The silence was deafening. We will explain next. All right, quick correction. This is the morning. This is the kind of morning it's going to be. Just so people know, I'm a little hungover this morning, all right? I don't normally say that. I don't normally get, you know, that sideways during the weekdays. But
no, it'll be a beautiful disaster this morning.
Let's
we'll have
hope
fun.
So.
People love watching a car wreck.
Yeah, okay. Well, they get to listen to one for the next 4 hours. I said that DeMeco Ryans was going with Robert Saleh to New York. Because during my drunken stupor last night, it was Amy's dad's birthday. So her parents came over and we watched a movie and drank a lot of wine. I saw that DeMeco Ryans got promoted. I had just assumed, because it was on the same tweet as Robert Saleh's name, I kind of conflated it and assumed that he was going with Robert Saleh because you and I had talked about that possibility if Saleh came here. DeMeco Ryans is getting promoted, but it's with the 49ers. He's now going to be taking Robert Saleh's job. He's stepping into a good situation. They're getting all these guys back healthy next year. DeMeco
He'll
Ryans,
look like,
fast track.
I think DeMeco is going to be very good. DeMeco is one of the most impressive all-around package players I ever played with on any level of football.
Yeah.
When it comes to off the field, in the locker room, on the field, says the right thing, works the right way, football IQ off the charts, all that stuff. I told you, like, I was in my 10th year in the NFL, and he was like the first teammate I ever had where I felt like I should be calling him sir.
And he was a rookie.
When he was a rookie,
So,
I think he'll do really, really well. And I was looking up, Texans Thoughts on Twitter had put out that, both Saleh and Brandon Staley were thinking about bringing the same offensive coordinators from either Mike LaFleur or Mike McDaniels. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know if it's been reported yet who Saleh wants to bring as offensive coordinator, but there's a chance that he and Brandon Staley, who the Texans are requesting an interview from, might be in competition for the same offensive coordinator.
Well, that's good news because I like Staley. I like what I've heard and read about him, and that's good news if that's what he's reportedly thinking about, because those are guys that are sort of off of the Kubiak-Shanahan tree. And that would be fun to see. You know, that it's good to have a window into what he's thinking.
And again, so Saleh is supposedly going to take Mike LaFleur as his offensive coordinator, which would mean his Texans Thoughts on Twitter. He's a good follow. He does film breakdowns and stuff. Texans_thoughts. He says that means Staley would likely bring Mike McDaniels, the run game coordinator.
Good.
Worked under Kyle Shanahan for 3 years.
I like it.
Whereas LaFleur had been the passing game coordinator.
Okay.
So, I don't know. The Texans really need a run game coordinator. And honestly, if you're going to bring in a Shanahan type of system, the run game part is the part that's actually harder to coach because a lot of coaches don't care enough about it. Like, they think, oh, we're just going to run outside zone and it'll be cool, right? No. There is a whole lot of technique that goes into running a relatively, like, on the surface, simple offense. The reason that they can be simple with the run game is because the offensive line and the running backs and the quarterback all have to be really, really detail-oriented and on the same page. So the Texans had the worst rushing offense in the league. If the Texans were to hire Brandon Staley, and if they were to bring Mike McDaniels, then that might actually be a good thing, even if maybe the apple of your eye was the passing game guy. This might work out better.
So last night, AT&T Sportsnet put up a poll as we shift gears to the Rockets. The Rockets, by the way, in case you're just waking up, didn't know, they won their first game in the post-James Harden era. They beat the Spurs last night on the road. It was a good win. No John Wall in that game. No Eric Gordon, I don't think. And they won that game last night, 109-105. So they're off to a good start post-James Harden. They're 2-0 without James Harden in the lineup this year. They put up a poll, Seth, and this got me thinking because I was on a station somewhere yesterday. Like you, I've done so many interviews out of market. Houston is such a curiosity right now for people outside of Houston. I've done more outside of market media over the last 4 days than I feel like I have over the previous 4 months. It's been wild. And one of the shows I was on, I don't remember which one, was asking me about the signature moment for James Harden. Like, what was the signature moment for James Harden? What will he most be remembered for in Houston? And I said, wow, that's a really good question. Because I don't know. I really didn't know the answer. I go, you know, I don't know that there's one play. He's more remembered for his failures in the playoffs than he is for any sort of signature moment in the playoffs. So AT&T Sportsnet put up this poll. What's your favorite James Harden moment with the Rockets? And it's on Twitter. And the four choices, and this says everything about James Harden's career here, I think. The four choices for your favorite moment for James Harden: winning the MVP, three-time scoring champ, and then the other two are a 50-point triple-double against the Knicks and scoring 61 points against the Knicks. So the only real moments, you know, like when you think of a moment, you think of, oh, he hit that shot and it won that really important game. Or, you know, he made this steal at the end of a game. Maybe not James Harden so much with the steals, but you know what I mean. That the only two real moments, like in-game, oh, remember when he did that, that there are two games against the Knicks in the regular season, over 8 years, two of the choices are regular season games against the Knicks, and the other two are really season-long accomplishments, not exact moments, I think is a really interesting metaphor for James Harden's career, which is he's going to be remembered. I mean, he's going to be remembered for a lot of the stuff that went down at the end, which just completely turned people up. But I think he's going to be remembered, Seth, as a guy who was a regular season assassin, you know, just piled up a bunch of numbers. And then when it came time for the spotlight to really get turned on and for him to really be the guy who was soaking up the national spotlight, he shrunk in the biggest moments. Two of the four choices are regular season games against the Knicks. And I don't think this is an inaccurate poll either, because I'm racking my brain to find one in the postseason where I go, yeah, remember when James Harden did that?
Yeah, in a lot of respects, and this is, I think perhaps sometimes when, you know, people that really love James Harden wonder why more people don't really love James Harden, the playoffs matter a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I think if you go back to Peyton Manning, before he ultimately won a Super Bowl, you know, the knock on him for a long time was, well, he's an incredible player in the regular season, but it kind of fades and disappears in the postseason. And was that fair? Was it all Peyton Manning's fault? No, not really. But the proof is in the pudding in the minds of people. And in this very irrational business of being a pro sports fan, you want to see playoff performances. That's why George Springer is better in the postseason than he is in the regular season, yeah. You know, when it comes to signature moments.
Over multiple postseasons, yes, like over a large body of work. He's just a clutch guy.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's bad in the regular season, don't get me wrong, but it's just, it's the postseason performances that just implant that stamp on your soul,
yeah.
You know, where you just remember that, coming up big in the World Series, all that stuff. So when somebody is as good in the regular season and they don't have any notable postseason moments. In a lot of respects, some of James Harden's most notable postseason moments are some of the most noticeable bad things in his career.
Yes.
The San Antonio closeout game, being on the bench for the Clippers comeback, things like that. That's what people remember about James Harden in the playoffs. So over the years, that starts to wear.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, look, Harden didn't have as good a team around him as a lot of other guys have had in the playoffs. And it's Steph Curry without his supporting cast. And Steph Curry didn't actually have Steph Curry has had finals appearances where on the stat line it looks like he didn't contribute. We know what actually happened. But that will be Harden's legacy until he wins a championship.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. It's a really, really confusing legacy, because I don't think there's an athlete in this town, Seth, who accomplished more individually over the last decade who is less beloved than James Harden.
Real quick, I want to get a little tease in without knowing what I'm teasing and when. Okay. What time do you want Cardale Jones on the show?
I'll tell you what, Seth. You take the break. Book it whenever you want to, and we'll come back. Cardale Jones.
We'll figure it out. We don't have any guests today other than potentially Cardale Jones to talk about Urban Meyer and Tom Herman.
Yeah. Okay, good deal. Yeah, Cardale Jones. All right, so Seth's going to book that, and we will tell you when that's going to be a little later on. Up next is Tony Dungy, member of the ad hoc committee. Is Tony Dungy to blame for the Texans' jacked up search methods? We'll explain next. Seth, I think it's fair to say that up to this point, that Texan fans, and maybe even people with the Texans, that they're more confused, maybe even angry, with the process that the Texans have taken so far in arriving at Nick Caserio as the GM than they are with the selection of Nick Caserio himself. Like, I think generally speaking, people feel like Nick Caserio is a very capable GM, but the way in which you arrived at it is does not inspire confidence. It actually inspired reportedly anger from their franchise quarterback, and I think it's left a lot of people very confused and concerned about the search for this head coach going forward. Is that a fair characterization, do you think, by me right there? That people are more angry over the process than they are over the actual selection of Nick Caserio?
Yeah. I don't know if they would be that angry over the process, because we really wouldn't know about the process as much unless Deshaun Watson had not voiced his displeasure. Yeah. And again, this is where I think when it's there's a tendency to think that Deshaun is. There's a tendency by some people to think that Deshaun is overstepping his bounds, or this isn't his role, or what does he know about hiring a general manager? And that's understandable that some people might feel that way. You got to remember that it wasn't just Deshaun, it was other people in the organization as well that thought that they were going to have a voice in the selection process, because they'd been told they were going to have a voice in the selection process, and all of a sudden, the selection process veered off in a completely different direction than the way it had been going.
Yeah.
So that's where I think you could tell the average fan, hey, this is how their selection process was. And I think the average fan would be like, all right, whatever. Like, I don't care. Just show me the baby, you know? But when the star quarterback expresses his disgruntlement and, you know, through various channels, then all of a sudden you blow it wide open and you start scrutinizing the process, and there's already a fair amount of distrust and uneasiness about Jack Easterby. All of this worked out in such a way that benefited Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
The other GMs were likely not going to be huge fans of Jack Easterby. This guy for which you abandoned your process, Nick Caserio, is apparently best buds with Jack Easterby. So all of that, it's just too perfect. It's just too perfect. And yeah, when your star quarterback's PO'd and it looks like he's got good reason to be, that's why people care about the process.
The thing that you said there that I want to hone in on is abandoning the process. You know, the phrase go rogue has been used a lot. That Cal McNair and Jack Easterby went rogue on everybody else and just ignored the search firm, ignored the recommendations of others in the building, jumped on a plane and went and got Nick Caserio. Tony Dungy, of course, Seth, is part of the ad hoc, air quotes, committee that Cal McNair invoked to get input, to get feedback on who to hire as the next general manager and the head coach. And Aaron Wilson has a piece up on the Chronicle where he talked to Tony Dungy. And we know that Jim Caldwell is a candidate for the job right now, a former Tony Dungy assistant. But he got some quotes from Tony Dungy about the conversations that he had with Cal McNair. And if you're somebody who is concerned about the process by which they arrived at Nick Caserio, and I think the big concern isn't so much Caserio, it's, oh man, one, is this a process that they're going to arrive at a head coach who maybe isn't as good a choice as Caserio was, where they're ignoring the input from other people? And two, anytime there's a broken process, it doesn't matter where you arrive at. You know, it doesn't matter that the result might be good. The blind squirrel finds the proverbial nut every now and then. If you've got a broken process, eventually these broken processes are going to result in the failure of your organization. Let me just read the Dungy quotes real quick, Seth.
Yep.
These are the quotes from Tony Dungy, and I'm reading these because when you read them, you go, boy, this almost sounds like this could have been the pep talk that Cal McNair needed to say, hey, let's get on the plane and go get Nick Caserio. I know that Omar Khan and Lewis Riddick and a handful of other candidates. I know those are the ones that everybody else are telling me these are the right candidates for us. But boy, I've had this gut about Caserio for 2 years now. Let's just go do this. This is a quote from Tunji. He says, I had one long conversation with Cal, and I told him what I thought, and he's got to decide what he wants and map it out. I told him what I learned from Dan Rooney, the late owner of the Steelers, and the formula for finding the right people like Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. There were thousands of people telling him to hire anybody but Mike Tomlin. He had Bruce Arians, Russ Grimm, Ken Wisenhunt, and Dick LeBeau on that staff. But Dan did a thorough search, found the right guy, and backed him to the hilt. That's what I told Cal to do, to investigate and turn over every stone to find that guy. Does that not sound like you could Mad Lib in the names of all the other GM candidates that they had identified and vetted, and that you could plug in Nick Caserio's name for Mike Tomlin, and that knowing what we know about Cal's feelings about Nick Caserio, he could have said to himself, I got to trust my gut here. I know everybody else is telling me Furchner and Kirchner and Kahn and Riddick. I know everybody's telling me this. My gut tells me Tomlin. I mean Caserio.
Yeah, I think that's very, very plausible. That's at least part of what went into it. And I think that's good advice at times. There's times in my life that I wish I had gone with my gut than perhaps what the textbook said to do.
Yes.
But I think that the problem is, and where it all breaks down, is that how much is Cal's gut feeling affected by Jack Easterby?
Yes.
And the Jack Easterby influence ends up with Cal having a gut feeling that also conveniently works out well for Jack Easterby.
Right.
That's the part that I just don't feel comfortable with. Yeah. I put out a long tweet at like 4 a.m. this morning because I'd been thinking about some things. And what I said in it, basically, to paraphrase Seth Payne, hopefully I don't get it wrong, but I think what Seth Payne was trying to say was that one of the hardest things for a billionaire to do, you know, in the plight of a billionaire, it's an awful life they live,
yeah,
but one of the hardest things to do has to be figuring out who to trust.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do you trust people? Who do you, like, you've got people coming at you all day long, asking for handouts, some of them just, you know, for charity, other people for business ventures, others because they want to help you take your football team to the next level. And it's got to be really, really hard to figure out who to trust. The part that I find so disconcerting about this entire situation are the reports that Jamie Rootes is on the outs with the organization. And this is where everybody bear with me for a minute, because I think the vast majority of our listeners might really only know Jamie Rootes from maybe a couple interviews here or there, and then his book release during the season this year. I don't think it was a good idea to release the book during the season, during a losing season like this. I think that was a mistake on his part, on the organization's part, all of that. So set aside your feelings about that, because frankly, that has almost nothing to do with everything I'm about to say about Jamie Rootes. Of every person in that organization that I personally know, you know, that I've spent time with and had conversations with, there are a few that 100% without a doubt have the Texans back no matter what. You know, so there are a few. I don't want to leave anybody out or anything. But like Mark Vandermeer is one of those people.
No
Mark
doubt.
Vandermeer is like dyed in the wool,
no
steel
doubt.
Blue, battle red. You 100%. Know, is always trying to do right and like gets ulcers over it. Like he has,
yes.
he has. But the other guy that I think of is Jamie Rootes. Jamie Rootes has been there from the very beginning, just like Mark Vandermeer. Now, because of the book release, I think Jamie Rootes had a quote that he could have phrased better, where it sounded like he was saying that money was more important than winning. What he was trying to say, I think, was that in the NFL, you're going to have up and down years. So you're going to have good years, you're going to have bad years, unless you're the Patriots for 15 years. Every other team has up years and down years. You want to put a good enough product out there that fans are still coming to the games when you're having one of those down years. And it was as simple as that, because he handles the business side of the operations. But every time I've ever had a conversation with Jamie Rootes, and I'm talking pretty much every time I've talked to him, even about relatively benign, non-controversial things, there have been times where I've had disagreements with Jamie over some of the controversial things that have gone on in the last few years. Every single time I've talked to him, it just oozes out of him, like, how viciously he will protect, you know, like, just how adamantly he will protect that family and that organization.
Yes.
He is just 100% about whether it's the right, whether it's the accurate thing to do or whether sometimes it's a misstep. His motivation and his focus is always in protecting the McNair family.
Yes.
In protecting the organization, doing what's best for the organization. So when I hear these reports about Jamie Roots being on the outs, and I see the way that Jack Easterby has wheedled his way into influence and power and control.
It's disgusting.
I just want to scream.
Yeah.
I just want to scream and just say, you cannot let this guy, Jack Easterby, supplant Jamie Roots as the guy that at the very least you trust. Everybody, every single one of your advisors is going to be wrong about things from time to time. But my God, if you don't have trust, or if your trust is misguided, you have no chance. And I see the potential that this guy, the one guy, one of the very few guys in the organization that I think the McNairs should trust no matter what, I feel like he's about to be swapped for somebody that the entire football world is screaming, watch out for this guy.
Yeah.
Watch out for this guy.
And I think, quite honestly, Seth, as long as we're talking specifically about Jamie here, one of the guys, the guy in that building who is qualified to fill in some of the gaps that remain with the organization now that Bob McNair is no longer with us. You know what I mean? Bob McNair was an incredible business person and an incredible front-facing owner for the organization. I know there were some glitches later on in his ownership, you know, PR-wise and whatnot. But by and large, Bob McNair was really, a great face for that organization, who had a big enough personality to be an owner. And I think that with him gone now, you know, you look, I think Jamie is the type of guy who would be able to fill some of those gaps. And I think, you know, the what this organization is experiencing right now from a PR standpoint is something that if Jamie's voice were more part of this whole thing right now, I think there would be much less of a fire drill going on with the organization. Like, he is a savvy business person and really good at the PR side of things. The book release notwithstanding, I think it's a really good point by you, but Jamie's career by and large over there has been tremendous from a business and a PR standpoint.
The other thing too now is that would come up is that people will say, well, hey, what about the whole Amy Palsic thing? Because Jamie Roots took responsibility for firing Amy Palsic,
right,
the VP of communications. All I would say is this, that Sports Illustrated article and others have basically accused Jack Easterby of sowing discord in the organization, of pitting departments against each other, mm-hmm, of kind of creating rifts as a divide and conquer strategy. I haven't really seen anything that disproves that. And when departments and people that otherwise had functioning relationships beforehand all of a sudden start kind of falling apart, and the people that used to be allies are now enemies and whatnot, this Game of Thrones type stuff,
very much
this soap opera type stuff, you can trace it all back to what Andre Johnson said. This all started when Jack Easterby got hired. That's when all of a sudden you lost a legitimate general manager in Brian Gain. Whether he was good or bad, he was a legitimate general manager, and you ended up with Tweedledee and Tweedledum as your general manager for the next 18 months. All of that started. Pay attention to what Andre Johnson is telling you. Pay attention to what Deshaun Watson is saying. With Deshaun, I don't think it's all about Jack Easterby, but just pay attention. This all started with Jack Easterby.
Well,
sowing discord, which ironically is mentioned in the Bible and not in a positive light.
Right. Ironically, yes. Very ironically.
Yeah.
Peter King was on WEEI yesterday, our sister station up in Boston. Seth, I want to play this. Peter King is of the opinion that Jack Easterby might not be here much longer. I don't know that I necessarily agree with Peter King, but take a listen to this. Here's what Peter King had to say on WEEI about Jack Easterby yesterday.
I think they will get rid of him. I think it was really an interesting sign. I don't even know how many people know this, but that Jack Easterby basically, was told not to talk to Sports Illustrated when that damning report came out. it reminded me of Scott Pioli in Kansas City when he was being really tarnished by Todd Haley, the former head coach there. You know, they didn't want him to talk. You know, what happens next? Not long after that, Pioli was gone. I think it's a matter of time before Jack Easterby is gone. As for why it hasn't happened yet, I don't know the answer.
I would say that as far as maybe reasons why Jack Easterby was instructed not to talk to Sports Illustrated, I'd say that it may have been lawyers telling him not to talk to Sports
right.
Illustrated. That this is there's a certain amount of maneuvering going on around that Sports Illustrated article. So I don't. When Peter King says that Jack Easterby was instructed not to talk, my impression of the Texans organization has been that Jack Easterby is the one telling people when and when not to talk. So if somebody told him not to talk, I'm guessing it was lawyers. It's a guess. It's an educated guess based on other things I know about all of that entire situation.
Yeah, I didn't get the comparison to Pioli there. Like I'm with you, Seth. I feel like those were they're two completely different situations. Peter King is very plugged in. Obviously, he's a Hall of Fame writer who's got a lot of contacts. We know he's got a lot of contacts within the Texans. I think some of his contacts probably aren't there anymore. He did the article during the preseason, sort of that diary of the COVID preseason with the Texans. But I think, to your point earlier, I think the people that helped arrange that for him, Bill O'Brien, Amy Palsik specifically, are not in the building anymore. But Peter King is a pretty plugged-in guy. Are you buying? He just says it very casually, as if this is a fait accompli that Jack Easterby is somehow going to be gone in the next 7 days.
Okay, so he does, and exactly, he says it kind of casually. This is where, even though I disagree with perhaps why Jack Easterby may or may not have been told to not talk to the media. So I think Peter King and I have a difference of opinion on that. But it's worth noting that when DeAndre Hopkins was traded, Peter King kind of casually mentioned it at the end of his MMQB, or no, what is it called now? Football Morning in America
right.
column on a Monday. I think it was the last thing he wrote in that column that
Might
day,
been,
wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And he just said, hey, something to keep an eye on. I don't know. And everybody accused him of being clickbaity. And all
we joked
sudden,
about it. Yeah, we did a whole segment like, yeah, if it happened, here's what it would look like. And then an hour
we talked about what the worst possible trade would be, and we actually underestimated how bad it would be. Do you remember?
Yes.
I don't remember what our package was, but I remember thinking, like, wait a second. That's worse than what we said was the worst, like, jokingly said was the worst possible thing they could get for DeAndre Hopkins.
I remember texting you when that trade was going down and texting you going, I can't believe that this is worse than the one we joked about. It was, it was bad. So your point is, though, that your point is don't get caught up in the tone of what Peter King is saying, that he's saying it so casually. He casually referred to a DeAndre Hopkins trade that wound up happening 2 hours after we were reading about it on the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, you know me and multitasking, how hard it is for me. I have to kind of pat myself on the back here.
Yeah.
Because I just scheduled an interview for Cardale Jones.
What time?
8:35.
When
we were actually also having a very lively discussion about the situation over with the Texans.
Yeah, okay. Look at you.
I hate to admit this. I mean, yeah. I was kind of half ashamed of it, but I think I owe a lot of it over these last several months to not drinking anymore.
I
know it's just not. I'm only ashamed because I feel like alcohol was affecting my life in a negative way. I kind of stopped drinking on a whim. And once I stopped drinking, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, I definitely am handling things a lot different than I used to. And if I had tried to do this, Sean, 5 months ago, I probably would have ended up screaming at you about something just ridiculous. Because I would have been messing up my text back and forth with Cardale Jones and everything.
There you go. Text message. I trust Peter King. Wasn't he the one that sort of broke the news on Hopkins? Yes, that's a text message. Seth was just talking about that. Yeah, it's... That'd be something to keep an eye on over the next few days for sure. All right. We'll get you the latest on the head coaching situation with the Texans. There are three spots now in the last 24 hours. Seth and I were just saying 2 days ago how slow the cycle had been. Like, boy, if you go back and look at the last couple years, man, by like January 7th or January 8th, usually half the spots are filled. And here we were yesterday on January 14th when we woke up and there were still seven job openings. None of them had been filled yet.
And then we wake up this morning and three of the seven are filled. So the dominoes are starting to fall. The Texans are still looking for a head coach. So we will get you updated on everything going on around the NFL with head coaching searches. And we'll rank it. Where do the Texans stack up right now among the four remaining head coaching openings? And who is the favorite? Who is the betting favorite right now? Because you can wager on these things. Who is the betting favorite to take the Texans' head coaching job? We'll talk about it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.